And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 732. Continuing our team by team previews to get ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. We head to South Beach area, not quite Miami, but pretty close, I think. Miami Marlins, we're getting there. To talk some Miami Marlins action. In order to help me do so, it's been a little while. We used to do Tout Wars together. I went to a different way. He's doing his. We got to actually meet at FPAS this year, So that was a lot of fun as well. You guys know the voice. You can find him at CBS Fantasy on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast with our good buddy Frank Stanfill and Scott White, and much, much more. You can find him over on Blue Sky at CP Towers. Chris Towers, how you doing, my friend?
Good. It's one of those. I'm up in New York, and it's one of those dreary January days where it's like it would be nice to be on South Beach, you know, instead of 41 degrees and raining.
Yes,
that would be a nice change.
Yes, it would be. And I always feel bad this time of year living in California. Like, to me, our weather is cold right now, but I know I have nothing compared to what you guys deal with. So I keep my mouth shut most of the time. But it's rain's coming here too. So I'm getting close to wanting to be on South Beach with you too. All right. Before we get started, promote everything you got going on. I kind of hit on it, but I know you're like extremely busy as things are ramping up over in the fantasy baseball world.
Oh yeah. We're doing the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Actually, this week we're going 5 days a week from now until October. So kind of missed any opportunities to take time off. I'll do that next fall, I guess. Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter, cbssports.com/newsletters. That'll basically be 5 days a week from now until October as well. So we got a lot going on.
Yep. It's that time of the year, folks, which is great. Baseball fans over here, so always great to experience that. And let's talk Marlins here. And before we get to the players, I always ask the guest, what were kind of your thoughts on how 2024 went for the Marlins?
Well, it was, it's always fun. I think they started 0-11.
Yeah, something like that.
You are and correct. So it's always fun when the season's over by mid-April. Like, they got their first win on the 10th day of the season, 0-9. It's like, yeah, season's done. We had a nice, fun, fluky playoff run in 2023, and now we're paying for it. And like, I think Peter Bendix has done a decent job. You know, I like what he's done, but it was always going to be a tough road here. They're even with the playoff run in 2023, it was a total fluke. They had a negative run differential. I was fine with them going all in and trying to make that playoff run. Just see if something stupid happens and you can make a little run. And they did, and it was fun. It was always going to require a little bit of a teardown. I had no problem with the Arias trade or any of that. I think they've done a decent job. The future looks as okay as it can for the Marlins, but obviously 2025 probably going to be pretty rough.
Yeah, it's one thing from watching from afar. It's like the Marlins, they got their, you know, they got their rings, but then it's like build, tear. And honestly, as a fan, I'd almost rather have that than just living in a world of mediocrity every year with hopes that never come. I don't know. How would you feel on that?
This is one of those things that people like, specifically with the like, oh, you won two World Series and that, you know, that overcomes everything, you know, like Cleveland fans will always say like, yeah, but you've got two World Series, so you can't complain. It's like, well, that was 22 years. Like, I'm 36 years old now. True. I was a sophomore in high school last time the Marlins won a playoff series. Mm-hmm. And like, the thing is, it'd be one thing if there were cycles of contention, but what it actually was 97, 2003, and then a whole bunch of nothing. Since then, there have been like 3 years where Marlins fans have had a reason to be optimistic going into the season. So it hasn't been fun. I like to, you know, kind of half joke that the reason I'm still a Marlins fan is because I don't feel like I deserve any better. Like there's something masochistic about it. Because like, you know, I grew up in South Florida. I was a Heat fan and then that went away. And it's like, man, that would have been a much more enjoyable ride the last 20 or so years, you know, three championships. That would have been a better choice. But God, for some reason, I stuck with the Marlins.
Yeah, maybe it's a Miami thing because I've been a lifelong Dolphins fan just because I grew up with Marino and everything.
Condolences.
And man, you know, you were talking about your droughts. Yeah, I was. And I'm older than you. I'm 41, but I was in high school the last time the Dolphins won a playoff game. So I mean,
yeah. just one game. Yeah,
just one. That's, So I understand what you're saying when you talk about it, because I have like Niner friends here in California and stuff. I'm like, oh man, this year sucked. I'm like, you guys have been to the Super Bowl like every 3 or 4 years, it feels like. I don't want to hear about anything right now.
Yeah. Like they've won 2 or 3 titles in my lifetime. They've been to 4 or 5. Like, yeah, that you would trade that pretty quickly. The Dolphins do love winning an offseason, though.
Oh, phenomenal.
You know, like, few better teams in July than the Miami Dolphins.
We enter every season as the same favorite or second favorite in the East, and then it just realize every year we're going to be like 9-8 or 8-9.
You go back home at third place
every year, and we get like the 14th or 15th pick in the draft that never builds our team. So, yeah, I'm used to it. It's rinse and repeat. All right, let's talk Miami Marlins baseball, though, and there are some very fun players to think about here, some that, you know, we can try to find the maybe upside in and see where we go here. But at best, like Chris was talking to me before the show, most of them aren't going to cost you much, and that's a beautiful thing. So for those keeping track at home, we're using ADP from the NFBC Draft Champions last 10 drafts. And right now you have Xavier Edwards. He's coming in with an ADP right around 150 over the last 10 drafts. Speed guy, not a ton of power. How are you feeling about Edwards as you get deeper in drafts?
I don't think I've actually drafted Edwards this year. And I think part of the problem is this has been a problem for the Marlins. I like to make the joke that their infields are like, oops, all second basemen. Like they had that period where like Joey Wendell was the starting shortstop, and they just keep playing guys way out of position. And Xavier Edwards is like by nature a second baseman. His defensive metrics were awful at shortstop last year, and he would be an even better fantasy option if he just had that second base eligibility. And I think he ended up just short of having enough to carry over. And that does hurt his value a little bit, just because shortstop's so top heavy. If you don't have power from your shortstop position, especially, it can be really hard to make up for it elsewhere, and he's just not going to hit for any power. I think he's going to be a good source of batting average. I think you're going to get a ton of speed, but it might be a two category profile. And really, there's a chance, because of how volatile batting average is, that it's a 1.5 category profile, where he hits like 265, 270, doesn't hurt you, but isn't the big help that he looked like last year. I think the speed will be there. He's going to play every day, probably at the top of the lineup, but it's a fairly narrow path to fantasy relevance in a time when the one thing he's really good at is, I think, easier to find than ever. And so, you know, am I going to use a middle infield spot on Xavier Edwards, or is there that much difference between him and Victor Robles, you know, 40 picks later? That's the thing I'm struggling with, all of the speed guys in that range. So I think like P.K.R. Armstrong is in a similar range with a very similar profile. Anthony Volpe is maybe a little bit ahead of them. Kind of the same thing, maybe a little more pop, a little less batting average. But with Bryce Terang, with all these guys, it's like, I don't know how much of that premium I want to pay for what are, in essence, steal specialists at a time when steals are easy to find at every point in the draft. So I think he's fine. He's clearly the best offensive option for fantasy on this team. I'm not terribly excited about him. And if he had second base eligibility, or if it looked like he was going to play second base early on this season, it would be a lot easier, I think, to get excited about that.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's the biggest thing for me, like you said, is the shortstop position in a nutshell with Xavier Edwards, because there are so many good ones there. And even around where Xavier is going, maybe a little bit before, actually, but you have like your Mason Wynn's, your Jeremy Pena's, your Dansby Swanson's, who at least add more of a 4-5 category profile, which makes it kind of very tricky to get to a more rabbity Xavier Edwards. So I'm with you on that. Probably a better real-life player than fantasy player right now.
But look, there's a chance that he hit 328 last year. He's not going to do that again, but there's a chance, you know, he hit for very good batting averages at AAA, and he could slap his way to something like 285, 290. Even in a bad lineup, maybe he could score 88 runs. Mm-hmm. And you can see a path to a top 12 shortstop finish there. It's just, if the batting average tumbles down to 260, then you're really talking about a guy who only helps you in a big way in one category. And that's tough, especially when it's, like I said, a category that every point in the draft, you're going to be able to find steals. You're going to have to sacrifice for them, but they're there. Yep.
Nope, 100% agree. Let's head to Connor Norby, who came over in the Trevor Rogers trade last year. Was really strong throughout the minors. Everyone was pretty excited about this one. 9 homers and 3 steals in 45 games with the Marlins. Hit .236. Some people are really excited about him this year for fantasy. Some are still a little bit tepid on him. ADP is around 265 right now with Connor Norby. Where are you sitting on Norby this season?
I think at that price, it's okay to make the plunge on Connor Norby. And it's kind of a, like, the Orioles had a lot of different versions of the same guy. And it was like Pokemon evolutions or like Russian nesting dolls, where it's like, you know, you've got like a Connor Norby, and then the better version of him is Jordan Westberg, and the better version of him is Gunnar Henderson, right? Like, they all have very similar profiles. And I think, you know, Heston Kjerstad and Colton Cowser are outfielders, but it's very similar in that they're all like good athletes. The plate discipline ranges from pretty bad to, even at the best, a little iffy. Mm-hmm. And in Norby's case, you've got actually much better athlete than I think he got credit for coming up, because he wasn't a super enthusiastic base stealer, but 94th percentile sprint speed. That's like, yeah, we could get 15 steals here. And he's got a, you know, when he taps into the pull side power, he can really, you know, as we saw last year, hit for some decent pop. It's just the plate discipline's really bad, especially for a guy who has, I mean, based on what we saw last year, average raw power. And so it's one of those where he really has to lift and pull the ball pretty consistently to have a chance at 20, 25 homers. I think he can get there. I wonder how much he has to sacrifice to do so. But, you know, I can see a world where he cuts the strikeout rate to 27% and does kind of a poor man's Jake Berger impression with a little bit of speed. Like, I think the batting average is probably never going to be helpful, and he's not a 30 homer guy. He certainly doesn't hit the ball as hard as Jake Berger, but, you know, he could hit 23 homers down the left field line and be a solid fantasy option. So as a corner infielder, I think Connor Norby is okay if you're waiting. There are higher upside guys that I prefer targeting. You'd prefer there be a little more raw power if you're going to sacrifice that batting average, because then the margin for error gets really slim. But I think he's okay. There's a reason he's, you know, the 260th player or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I like him as a late corner. If you missed, like you said, I think that's where he fits perfectly. There's a world where he's young and can develop. And unlike Berger, like, yeah, maybe less power, but he might run a little more too. So it's like a yin and a yang to that. And you don't get a lot of speed at third base to begin with. So yes. I do like Norby a bit. He had a couple runs last year, which you're like, okay, I could see where there's some skill there for sure. And it's just a matter of, like, with the Marlins and a bunch of these other kind of like lower tier teams, a lot of youth. So a lot of things, there's a lot of outcomes basically with these players that are,
that's the thing about a really bad team is the Marlins are, I think they might be the worst team in baseball in 2025, frankly. Like, I know the White Sox were the worst team ever last year, but they had a lot go wrong in ways that I think they'll be significantly better, still very bad. The Marlins, I don't know, maybe they can pitch their way to like 65 wins, but that kind of feels like a, almost like a ceiling outcome for them. I'm pretty down, but there are wide ranges of outcomes when you're talking about young, unproven players. These aren't like the most naturally gifted players of all time, but you look around the league and there are always examples of guys coming out of relatively nowhere. Guys we assumed were kind of quad A talents who became more than that, or guys who were low end top 100 prospects, which the Marlins have had a ton of those right now, who live up to something like a 70th percentile outcome. And I think if that happens for Connor Norby, you're talking about a guy who probably hits 250, but maybe it's 25 and 12, 25 and 15 on the high end. That would be a really nice outcome. It's not the likeliest outcome, but he's going to get the chance. He's another one, though, like Xavier Edwards. you would like it a lot more if there was also second base eligibility like there was last year. And you know, maybe they could play him there. You know, Otto Lopez had a decent season and he's probably pretty locked in, but he's probably more of a fringe utility guy as the Marlins develop. So maybe Connor Norby gets five appearances at second base at some point and can be a little more viable as a, you know, middle infielder, or just gives you a little more flexibility with that profile.
Yep, I'm with you. Second base would be glorious. Let's head to Jesus Sanchez, a guy that was phenomenal to stream last year in weeks where the Marlins faced a lot of righties, partly because it seemed like he platooned, but he didn't. He played 149 games. 18 homers, the 16 steals was a nice plus, and hit 252. So he's hit basically 250 three of the last 4 years, which is really good to see with a guy where people were concerning with the plate skills and all that stuff. You come into this offseason with Jesus Sanchez, an ADP of 242, everyday role in the outfield. What are your thoughts on Mr. Sanchez?
There are a handful of platoon bats who are being drafted in most 15-team leagues. And, you know, like, Kerry Carpenter goes a lot higher. And I think he's probably a better righty masher. But there's probably not a huge difference between those two guys if they're both just going to be platoon bats. And I do think Sanchez is not someone even in a 15-team league that you should ever want as an every-week starter, because there are going to be those weeks where he's got three lefties on the schedule, and he's terrible against lefties. He's got way too much swing and miss. He opens up and just gets eaten alive. He hit 162 against lefties last year, and that was not the worst performance he's had against lefties in his career. So he is strictly a platoon bat. The speed was a surprise and was very nice to see. The quality of contact, he's always been capable of hitting the ball hard when he gets into it, but last year actually took a big step forward in that regard, in a way that, like, you can see him settling in over the next 3 or 4 years as, like, Jock Peterson with some athleticism. And that's not a bad player, you know, like, especially since he's outfield eligible and not util only. So it's not an exciting profile. I don't think there's much more than like a 20 homer ceiling, and the counting stats are going to be pretty bad. So again, not someone you want in your lineup every week, but in those draft and holds where, you know, he only gets in your lineup when he puts up the big numbers, or if you're managing and it's a deeper league and you see the Marlins have six games on the schedule with righties, I think he's going to be useful. It was what, an 800 OPS against righties last year. That's usually right around where he ends up. That's a useful but unspectacular player.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think there's a lot to like. Like I said, we used him a lot off the waiver wire at the right weeks, and that's when you want Jesus Sanchez. You won't be able to do that this year because he will be rostered in 15s, like you said, but just make sure he's like your, you know, have a platoon for him on your team type scenario. All right, now things start to go in a different direction. Jonah Bride. And again, in 15s, Jonah Bride had his weeks last year.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly did. When you're looking at Jonah Bride, Jonah Bride has an ADP of 447 right now. Where are we at on Jonah Bride?
I was doing a really weird search yesterday for players who had at least a 700 slugging percentage over at least a 50 plate appearance span over the course of the season. Just looking for like really low end guys you wouldn't even think about. And Jonah Bride had a couple of different ones, which was surprising, but there were stretches last year where he was actually pretty useful, especially down the stretch. The problem is, once you, like, he played kind of like a slugger, 11 homers and 272 plate appearances. You extrapolate that out to a full season, and that's a 22 to 25 homer pace. And then you actually dig into the underlying numbers a little more, and there is very little raw power here. It's 106 mile per hour max exit velocity, 87 mile per hour average exit velocity, 34% hard hit rate. It's a little dispiriting, the gap between what he actually accomplished and what the numbers were. But like, the minor league numbers are decent. He had a 940 career OPS at AAA. He's an older guy, so you take that with a big grain of salt, but the plate discipline's really good. He walks a lot. I think he's probably a useful-ish player for a team like the Marlins to have. And oh, I'm blanking on the – there's a third baseman that they had for a while. Brian Hamilton? No.
Brian Anderson?
Brian Anderson. That was the name. Where, like, he had a couple of years where he, like, hit 18 homers and hit 265. And, like, I guess I could see that for Jonah Bride. And, again, he's going to get the opportunity. I think even in a 15-team league, he's barely worth drafting, though.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, wherever I have drafted him, it's in those 50-round drafting holes where you're just like, it's my third or fourth first baseman, essentially, where we're just, you know, you're there if needed type thing.
Yeah, and that's pretty much where we're at on the rest of the Marlins, I think. Yeah. I don't know if we want to get into some of the prospect-y types in this part, but there are some more interesting names that just might not be on the opening day roster.
Oh, yeah, we can definitely get to those in after just a few more. And we don't have to go deep on these ones if you don't want to, but like, we got Otto Lopez. He's going to be the starting second baseman, barring some kind of change. We saw a few moments out of him, but at the same time, they're small type moments.
Yeah.
ADP is around 330. Where does that stand for you with Lopez?
You know, I'm looking at the ATC projections right now, and Otto Lopez is one that, like, there might be a little bit of value here because he's only projected for 438 plate appearances, but that's six homers and 18 steals with a 273 batting average. So if it's more like 600 plate appearances, if he just plays every day, which on this team, I don't really know why he wouldn't. It's not like the Marlins have, you know, a plethora of second base options that they can, you know, reasonably play against him above him because they're all playing shortstop and third base. I kind of think Otto Lopez is a little bit interesting because you give him, you know, 600 plate appearances and maybe it's 25 steals and maybe it's a 275 batting average and maybe it's 8 to 10 home runs. And like, I really like Luis Renjifo. I'm not sure it's that different if that's what happens. Like, that requires, I think, Otto Lopez playing every day in a way we know Luis Renjifo will. It requires him probably taking a little bit of a step forward. I'm not saying he's as good as Luis Renjifo, but if we got to the end of the season and Otto Lopez finished as like the 180th best player in fantasy because he just played every day, I could see a world where that happens. It's not going to be exciting ever. It's a pretty boring skill set. There's a reason he's playing every day for the Marlins. Excuse me, that's my cat feeder. Anyone who listens to FBT can will know that one because it goes off every night during the podcast. But like, there's some batting average skills here. There's some athleticism. It's not a terrible profile if you need just a late source of speed for your bench.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He almost feels like a Xavier Edwards light, potentially, maybe more pop when all things are said and done. And I go back to that original conversation, he's second base, unlike the other ones. So there's something there as well. All right, Davison De Los Santos came over from Arizona in the trade, power for days. There's questions on a lot of other aspects of his profile because we haven't really seen them. ADP's 403. Where are you sitting on De Los Santos?
I mean, he might just be Jake Berger.
That's fair.
Right? Like, you know, you look at what he did in the minors. The one thing that's – he's had a weird career because the production, especially last year, was phenomenal. And if you remember, he was, I believe, drafted by the Guardians in the Rule 5 draft. He didn't make their roster. They sent him back to the Diamondbacks. He has this huge breakout at AAA, gets traded to the Marlins, continues, you know, still hits, ends up with 40 homers across AA and AAA last season in 137 games as a 21-year-old. You know, that's the thing that I think is really interesting about Davison De Los Santos is like you these types of players who put up big minor league numbers but don't necessarily have the scouting love, they're often 24. You know, like I'm thinking of like Kevin Crone a few years back where he had like a massive season for AAA playing in I think Reno and it's a band box and it ended up not working out. He was an older guy. Davison De Los Santos did this at 21, and he did this with a 24% or 25% strikeout rate, 40 homers, hits the ball really hard. This is, I think, among the guys we've talked about, probably the most interesting and exciting talent that the Marlins have. Now, there are, I don't know, four or five of these guys at various levels in basically every organization in baseball, guys who can hit the ball really hard, but have huge contact questions. And if they can't make enough contact, it doesn't matter how hard they hit the ball. But because of his very young age and because he plays for the Marlins, I do think Davison De Los Santos is going to get an opportunity. This is one where I'm not sure I agree with, like, Roster Resource has him as the opening day DH. I'm going to guess the Marlins are going to go with, honestly, I'm not sure who else. It might be Dane Myers or something, but he took just a small step back when he got to the Marlins, hit only 240 at their AAA affiliate. Because there's no reason to call him up on opening day, I kind of think this is one that they might be inclined to let wait until May. As frustrating as that would be, because it would be nice to have a guy to get excited about, you know, I think he's not necessarily going to be on the opening day roster, unfortunately. But if he is, I think it's worth getting excited about with a late round pick.
Yeah, I was hoping they'd bring him up at some point last year. That never happened. So, I'm looking forward to when they do let him go.
Matt Mervis, that's the name I was thinking of. I would think you give him a chance before Davison De Los Santos, just because it's very similar profile. But like I mentioned earlier, there was a time when Matt Mervis was starting to get a little hype 2 years ago for fantasy. A lot of people were really excited about him. He was 24, 25 at that time when he was putting up big AAA numbers. So that's the distinction. And I think just, you know, you've got him, you've got Kyle Stowers, who's a little bit older. You've got Griffin Conine. I think you probably want to cycle through as many of those guys as you can. Give them a chance to fail. They probably will. And then call Davison De Los Santos up. That's my guess on what's going to happen. I hope not. I hope he forces the issue in spring training, but I don't necessarily think he's going to be on the opening day roster.
All right, I'm going to just group these guys together because there's a lot of Spider-Man memes, it feels like, and you got to mention it. So you have Griffin Conine, you have Kyle Stowers. Stowers came over with Norby. You even have Derek Kill, who mashes lefties, and some want him to play more. How do you see the rest of that outfield playing out? Because we know Sanchez is locked in. Now you have the rest to play with. Is anything really worth getting too excited over?
I think these are all NL-only league types. You know, Conine has big raw power, can hit the ball pretty hard. Might be, like, legitimate close to top of the grade raw power. I think there was, like, a PD thing at one point in his career when he was like more of a prospect in the Blue Jays system, but he's put up big power numbers throughout his career. This huge swing and miss, though. It's like you're talking 35% strikeout rates at most of his stops in the minors. So it's probably untenable. Stowers, kind of a similar profile, maybe not quite as much high end power, but maybe a little more contact. But I don't think any of these guys are really likely to ever be much more than, hey, did you see that bomb that Griffin Conine hit? Ignore the you know, 12 strikeouts in his next 15 plate appearances. I think that's probably, and the Marlins in the long run would probably like to see Victor Mesa Jr., you know, fight for a job in spring training. He's someone, the profile doesn't really make a lot of sense for fantasy because he's a middling power guy without a lot of speed, but he's got a chance to be the center fielder in Miami. So that's another name, but it's probably there. The ceiling is like 15 homers, 15 steals with a bad batting average. So again, almost everyone else on the roster is just an NL only league type of guy.
Yep. Unfortunately that checks out. All right. With that being said, let's talk pitchers, because we actually have some more interesting stuff to talk about here. And it starts with the return of one of the GOATs in Sandy Alcantara, who was one of the most consistent things we'd seen in years. Finally succumbs to an arm injury like almost every good pitcher does these days. But coming back this year, it looks to be good to go. ADP around 164. Are we in at that price tag?
It is the tough thing with Sandy, and I think the biggest question, and it's kind of an unanswerable question, is how do they treat the innings coming back from Tommy John surgery? Is this a situation where I mean, it's Sandy Alcantara. Are you going to pull him after 93 pitches if he's cruising? I tend to think not. You know, like, we're talking about a 29-year-old who was the most consistent workhorse in baseball, was the only guy throwing complete games the year he won the Cy Young. I tend to think he's not going to get to 200 innings, but hey, nobody gets to 200 innings. I think there's still a decent chance he gets to 170, 180 in his first year back, just because I can't see a situation where he's going to be okay with being pulled after four or five innings routinely. This is one where, as long as he's pitching well, I think they're going to just let him go. And there aren't a lot of examples of this, of the guy coming back from Tommy John surgery and throwing 180 innings. Yep. There are a few, though. I think Lance Lynn threw like 220 in his first season. Anybody back from Tommy John.
It would be Lance Lynn, that's for
and,
sure.
And Sandy, you know, it's a question of staying healthy. He took a step back in 2023, and you have to wonder if he was just pitching through that elbow injury for longer than it took for it to break, because the changeup and slider were both just a little less effective, and it took a lot of the strikeout rate away, and he struggled overall. Although, if I'm remembering correctly, he was much better as the season went on, and it was really just the first couple of months where he struggled. But it was an ERA right around 325, 330 from July 1st on. I still think Sandy can be a hugely impactful player. 160 ADP, I think that's okay. Yeah.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm especially the big part that I've been saying, that you just said as well, is I think they're just letting him go.
Yeah.
Like, once we go down the rest of this list, they have to let him go.
Yeah, it's not going to be
the reality of it.
It's not going to be 223 again or whatever it was that, but I don't think it's going to be 150.
No.
You know, like, I don't think there's any way Sandy Alcantara makes 32 starts and doesn't go 180 innings, unless he's just terrible or gets hurt again.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, similar to the outfield, like, I like a lot of these guys, but they all have their issues, yeah. I guess, and questions involved. So you got, like, Ryan Weathers, best shape of his life. Edward Cabrera, we know if he throws strikes, it's great. Max Meyer, we've heard the potential. Maybe this is the year. We'll stick with those three first. So how do you kind of differentiate these three for fantasy with Weathers, Cabrera, and Max Meyer?
I think I'm done with Cabrera. Okay. Just like, I've done this multiple years in a row now of like, what if he throws strikes? And he never does. And, you know, I thought, well, the Marlins have a history with this tall, lanky, you know, guy who struggled to throw strikes in Sandy Alcantara. Maybe the same thing can happen with Edward Cabrera. And there's just been very little development in that regard. He's really hard to square up, gets a lot of swings and misses. The stuff is great. And, you know, maybe he's someone who moves into the bullpen and becomes an absolute lights out reliever. I could see that. Maybe the control issues are a little less worrisome there, but I tend to have lost my excitement for Edward Cabrera. But Weathers, I think there's plenty to be excited about. He went on a really nice run at the end of last season. There was, I think it was a finger injury early on that kind of derailed him. It took him a while to figure it out after that. But there is some pretty interesting skills there. There's some velocity. He had a velocity jump last year. And among the non-Sandy options, I think Ryan Weathers is probably the most interesting. It's a question of turning, like, the stuff should get strikeouts. Like, he's got a high 90s fastball, 95.9 miles per hour from the left side. That's pretty close to elite velocity. 38% whiff rate on the changeup, 51% whiff rate on the sweeper. Like, those are really big numbers. Hitters didn't really do much against the changeup or sweeper. The fastball got hit pretty hard and didn't have elite whiff rates. And so, you know, maybe there's a pitch mix change he could make. Problem is, the sinker was even worse. So I don't know if it's a question of moving to that or going more, you know, secondary forward. But I think there's a path to Ryan Weathers being not that different from what Jesus Luzardo was for the Marlins.
He did have the hype train for quite some time, so I could see that.
And, you know, it's kind of a similar profile where it's like, very good fastball velocity from the left side, bad shape. So he needs to be sitting 96 to really make it work. But the secondaries are really good. So I could see that kind of outcome. And remember, look, I'm not saying Ryan Weathers should be even a top 200 pick. Yeah. But one, he's going 450-ish right now. Jesus Luzardo was a top 100 player in drafts this time last year. So I think that's we're talking absolute ceiling case here, but I think that's within the realm of possibility. Max Meyer, I need to see something in spring training before I really take note of him, because he was a guy who, again, fastball shape. The Marlins have a type, and it's hard thrower with a bad fastball. Even Sandy, like, for all the velocity he gets, he's never been a big whiff guy with his four-seamer. And Max Meyer, a little bit of a smaller guy, doesn't have the ideal, you know, vertical approach angle. The slider, I think what I need to see is either him sitting 95 in spring, or I think I need to see the slider have a little more sharpness and a little more bite. And if he's out there getting a ton of whiffs with the slider, then I can start to get interested. But right now, it just, where it was last year, nothing really worked for him. And so he's a name to watch in spring training, but like, even when I'm doing like deep sleepers lists, the Marlins have other guys I think I'd rather throw that label on, including, I think, Ryan Weathers, given where he's being drafted.
Okay. Yeah. The Weathers talk, I'm all about that. I've been wondering what to do with him. I want to ask you about Eury Pérez now. This is a guy we've seen some great stuff from, also young hiccups, had the Tommy John surgery last April, started throwing bullpens here lately. They're all very optimistic. He could not miss too much time to start the year. It's always, you know, we'll see how that goes type deal. Where do you sit on Eury Pérez? Cause he's approaching like an ADP, a little less than 500 right now.
It's in the long run, I think it's almost impossible to be too excited about Eury Pérez. There are so few pitchers who even make it to the majors at 19. I believe he was 19. Was he 19?
I think so.
Yeah. It was 2023. He got to the majors. If not, it was right after his 19th birthday. There are so few pitchers who get to the majors at 19, 20, let alone pitch as well as he did. And as a reminder, it was 91 innings, 10.6 K per nine, a 315 ERA. He's got elite fastball velocity. Again, doesn't get as many whiffs as you'd think for a guy who throws 98, 99, 100, but his slider, curveball, and changeup were all in the top 10 among all pitchers that year in whiff rate. This is like potentially the best pitcher in baseball. Like, that's the kind of upside when you're talking about the career arc that he was on before the injury. It's dependent on him coming back from the injury without any issues, which is, we hope that's the case, and I think we often treat it as if it's the case, but it's not necessarily always the case. I don't think we see him until June. So if you're talking about NFBC leagues where there's no IL spots, I think it gets really difficult to draft him. But in your home league, your 12-team league where you've got five or six IL spots, you can draft him in a reserve round, throw him in an IL spot. The problem is those IL spots tend to fill up pretty quickly. Yeah. In April especially, and so it might be hard to keep him around, but I think we're going to see him in June. I would hope that they'll just mostly let him pitch the rest of the way, and you know, if we get another 100 innings of really, really good production from him this season, I think that's reasonable. So it's just how patient you can be, what your league format is, but Eury Pérez is still someone, whenever he's on the mound, I'm going to be excited about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been slowly taking some chairs in some 50-round leagues just to kind of get a little taste for later on. So I love the talent. I'm with you 100% on that one. Any other starters to kind of keep in mind? Braxton Garrett's out for the year. I don't know too much about their minor league system. Anybody else we should keep in mind?
Yeah, a couple of prospects worth mentioning were guys that they got in the – I think it was the Tanner Scott trade, both Adam Major and Robbie Snelling. And Major, I'm not sure the stuff is there. He was always, as a prospect, someone who it was like he ranks somewhat highly as a prospect because he's a high likelihood major leaguer, but it's probably a number five starter. Snelling, I think, is interesting because of what he did after getting to the Marlins. At the beginning of last season, he was one of the most hyped lefties in all of baseball in terms of prospects. He had a huge breakout in 2023, got to Double A, had a 182 ERA, 1024 K per nine in 2023, just did not look good in 2024 when he was with the Padres. 8.2 K per nine, a six ERA, a bunch of walks. Then he gets traded to the Marlins, and I know the Marlins are kind of a punching bag, I'm aware, but the one thing the Marlins have done well over the past half decade or so is develop young pitchers. And Snelling got his control way better after getting to the Marlins, got the K per nine above 10 at both Double A and Triple A. It was only eight starts. So I think people are, you know, in prospect rankings, rightly pumping the brakes and saying, let's see it again. But Snelling's one that if he has four good starts to open the season at AAA and is successful in spring training, I think we could see him fairly quickly. And there's definitely some skills to be excited about. It's not like elite velocity. It's like 93 from the left side, which is more good, but not great. But yeah, I think Robbie Snelling is the one guy at AAA who's really worth watching. If we're talking maybe later in the year, you know, I do expect Dax Fulton, Thomas White, and Carson Milbrandt to open the season at Double A. Noble Meyer probably a little below. And Thomas White especially is one of the, I don't know, 15 best pitching prospects in baseball right now, and someone that a lot of the prospect people think could be a really, really fast riser, to the point where, you know, mid-season updates this year, we could be talking about him as one of the handful of best prospects in baseball. So he's another guy that's worth getting excited about, but that's probably more of a 2026 or very late 2025 if he really proves himself at Double A. That's more what we're talking about, I think.
All righty. Let's head to the bullpen. Calvin Fauché actually was quite serviceable once he took over last year. Appears to have the reins for now, barring getting traded at some point or whatnot with what takes place there. ADP of 352, so not costing you anything right now. So where are we sitting on him? We know Tinoco was getting some run as well.
Yeah, and Anthony Bender also has a very small amount of experience closing games, and the Marlins seem to like him. So they have some options. I would guess, you know, Fauché's got really good stuff. The command is occasionally not great, but I think if you're looking for saves here, Calvin Fauché is probably the way to go. Like I said, 65 wins might be an optimistic projection for this Marlins team, so there won't be a ton of opportunities. And I don't think Fauché is a lights out closer by any means, but I think he can be good enough. That, what'd you say that the ADP was?
Fauché is about 352. Yeah.
Probably one of the cheapest likely closers in baseball right now. And I would guess as we get closer to spring training, maybe the Marlins start explicitly talking about him as the closer. You probably see that move up a bit, especially if, you know, we could see some impressive gifs of him making hitters look foolish with his stuff in spring training, and that'll push the price up a little. But nobody's going to be, you know, drafting him with a top 150 pick, probably not even top 200 at any point. So Fauché is likely to be a very nice value. And I think he could be good enough to just be the closer all year.
Yep.
The problem is when you're talking about the bad teams, a lot of playing time opportunities, specifically with closers, though, I think there's a very good chance if he has a good season that he's out the door, but before, you know, certainly before August.
Well, the beauty is at that ADP, you can take him now, get the 15 saves or whatever, and move
who
on.
Who cares? Yeah.
Yeah. You're groovy at that point in time. All right. Any other prospects? I think we hit on most of them, but anybody else worth keeping an eye on for 2025?
We didn't mention Augustin Ramirez.
Oh, goodness gracious. One of the best prospect catchers in baseball.
Yeah.
Catcher 3 in a lot of drafts for me.
Not sure. Like, he's one of those guys where it's like, it's not clear he's actually a catcher in the long term. And I'm always wary of the, well, we don't know if he's going to stick at catcher, but if he doesn't, he'll hit well enough to play at another position. Cause like, if that's actually true, he should probably be a top 25 prospect. If he's actually capable of playing catcher and could be a good enough bat to play at first base, he's probably underrated as what the 60th or 90th best prospect. That's usually the range he's in. So I'm skeptical whenever I hear that, but big breakout last year, hit 267 with 25 homers, 22 steals as a catcher. There's some athleticism here. It comes with, I think the scouting report is like the swing decisions aren't great, but he makes enough contact and hits the ball hard enough that it plays up. And yeah, there is some speed here at the catcher position. So Agustín Ramírez, another one where the people around the team don't seem to expect him to be on the opening day roster, despite the success that he had. The production backed up a little bit once he got to AAA, although he found it again when he got to the Marlins, which is a good sign. Just because the breakout was so heavy in the AA track record, but it sounds like the Marlins probably won't have him on the opening day roster either. But Nick Fortes is not a,
he's not the answer.
He's not a starting caliber catcher. Like the Marlins like him. They like the intangibles and the defense and whatever, but he's not a roadblock if Agustín Ramírez proves himself. And if they, you know, he is one of those guys where it could be a part-time catcher, part-time DH, part-time first baseman thing. And, you know, maybe for fantasy, the ideal arrangement would end up being like, hey, can we get Connor Norby back at second? Just play Davison De Los Santos at third, even though he's probably bad there. Let's get Agustín Ramírez at first base. Like, if they could do that, that would make a lot of sense for our purposes and would get everybody on the field that we like, but it's probably not going to happen that way. Ramírez, in those 50-team draft and holds, I think he's a very nice third catcher with some upside. Yep. Outside of that, it gets harder, you know, when you're talking about having to burn a bench spot if he's not on the opening day roster, but he's definitely one. I think on this team, Davison De Los Santos and Agustín Ramírez are the key ones to watch in spring training, because if they're playing with the A lineup more often than not and they're performing well and we get to the end of March and it really looks like they're going to be on the roster, I think both of those guys are at least worth a bench pick in any league if we get to that point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love Agustín. I'm a big, big fan. There's a lot of good young catchers coming our direction, and he's definitely near the top, if not the top, for fantasy purposes when we discuss things. Because like you said, Nick Fortes should not be the guy stopping him. And then if you look on Roster Resource, the bench catcher is Liam Hicks.
Yeah.
There's no reason outside of just can't hit the broadside of a barn in spring training that Agustín should not be on this roster doing something.
Yeah.
All right. You kind of hinted at it earlier, but I do ask every guest before we head out of the preview show, what are your expectations for 2025?
A lot of low scoring games, a lot of losses, and then maybe an interesting, fun second half. That is, I think, the best case scenario is the Marlins lose a bunch of games, set themselves up for another high pick in 2026 draft, continue to add talent, and then maybe go on a little run in the second half where they start to play maybe 500 ball and Ramírez and Davison De Los Santos and these guys are up and you start to see some glimmers of hope led by Sandy Alcantara and Yuri Perez down the stretch. So I'm going to say 60 wins is a maybe optimistic prediction for the Marlins.
And hopefully a high draft pick to come back and keep rebuilding, because you do have a lot of youth. Just got to put it all together for sure.
Need some impact prospects. They got a lot of guys in the 60 to 150 to 200 range of the overall rankings. It'd be nice to have a top 10 prospect just as a treat. True. I wouldn't mind that.
That's always fun. All right, Chris, it's been a pleasure. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, CP Towers on Blue Sky and Twitter. I'm not on Twitter as much, but Blue Sky, you can get all my thoughts. Otherwise, cbssports.com/fantasy for all my writing. Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter, cbssports.com/newsletters. That'll be going out pretty much Monday through Friday from now until October. And, of course, the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I saw. I believe you guys finished second in the podcast awards.
So, yeah, that was nice. Yeah, the Mets podcast beat us out. That's fine. They got one. They can have this off season.
Yeah, they have all the money. It's okay. Yeah. But all right, I appreciate it, my friend. Always a pleasure chatting with you. And for some reason, if you're not following Chris and you're listening to this, I don't know. But if you haven't, go fix that. So I appreciate it, man. Thanks for chatting with me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 732, your 2025 Miami Marlins preview. Catch y'all next time.